the TOCast episode 576, Cheese Fights.
And this week, guys, we talk Helldivers 2, Balatro, and Last Epoch. Stay tuned.
Stay away from my mozzarella.
Diabetes. We're back. It's the TILCast. It's an M-rated show. I'm Nas.
I'm Jason.
I'm, Yassi. Rusty.
Peeling carrots. And, the three of us are going to get out 30 minutes of bullshit.
Bullshit.
Some, games and some news. It is, Sunday, March 3rd, and in the center of the country, it is 78 degrees.
It's 58 here, and we have all of the windows open because, well, I mean, it's basically summer.
Well, yeah.
Now, if we could keep it at 60 degrees all year round, I'd be happy. 60 degrees, sunny, grass is green.
I've got the AC on.
I've got the windows open and you know, was airing stuff out. I already set off the fire alarms in the house once today. So.
And you're peeling carrots?
Well, I mean, it all kind of goes together. So,
is that what you call it?
I am currently like cooking. I'm cooking 12 pounds worth of chuck roast.
Do you plan on pooping ever again?
Well, it's not for me. Jeez, it's not all for me. I have like one of the roasts tonight, and then I'll do something with them later. But yeah, 12 pounds for the chuck roast, but they had to be seared. And you just can't get a good sear unless the pan is ripping hot. Well, that produces just enough smoke. Or for the fire alarms to go off, especially when you're searing three big fucking roasts. So,
I got a good sear on them. Or if you're searing in cast iron.
Well, I mean, that's the only good way to sear it, right?
Yeah, I mean, you can get it hot enough to, or it doesn't warp the pan.
I mean, I've got that thing ripping hot. I throw a little bit of neutral oil in there. Got my my roast with just salt on it because you don't want to burn pepper. And you sear it on both sides. And then once I was done searing all three roasts, I deglazed the pan and then I cooked some caramelized onions in the, in there and put that in there. And then I was peeling my carrots and I put some peeled carrots in there. I know that those carrots are going to come off super duper soft, but that's perfectly fine for me. Because I'm looking for flavor. Did the same thing with some celery stock, put that in there. It's just for flavor. And I'm gonna do some I've got these little tiny potatoes. So I'm gonna toss those in oil, salt and oil. I'm gonna roast them, and then I'm gonna smash them flat, and then I'm gonna roast them again. So they're gonna come out nice and crispy. Oh, they're going to be so good. Yep, that's dinner tonight.
That doesn't sound
that's
bad.
Dinner tonight.
That doesn't sound bad at all.
It's freaking, it's going to be super awesome. But, this is the day where I cook a lot. Some people just cook, big meal or a couple big meals on the weekend and then just like, put them away for lunches and shit. That's kind of what I'm doing, but I'm also going to use some of the leftovers that I'm, that I'm cooking here for beef stew. And some of the best meat for beef stew I've found is leftover chuck roast. So, because, it's by the time it gets done with, in the stew, cause I don't cook the, I don't cook the stew like, again, for 8 hours, I cook it just enough to cook the veggies. It's so, broken down enough that it's, that, like you don't have to have teeth to eat it. So, You can gum it to death and it still tastes great.
Food for old people.
Food for old people. And indeed. So I'm going to be making that tomorrow. You know, so that's kind of the idea. And I'll have fucking, you know, pot roast and beef stew for the rest of the week, I am sure.
Yeah, I think there was a jingle with some barbecue place around town that said you don't need no teeth to eat our beef.
Right, right. Yep. Hey, I'm aiming for that. Like,
don't need no meat teeth to eat this beef.
It was right. I mean, it was, I think they were selling, what was it? Pot roast, I think it was.
Pretty sure it's just brisket.
Was it brisket? Okay. Yeah,
it was brisket. It was just, it was so freaking tender and juicy. Like their cooking process just kept the brisket fall apart.
Yeah.
Like they couldn't even cut slices of brisket without it just,
I mean,
with half of it falling to pieces.
I'm hoping that it requires, like, I've got a pair of tongs that is like a spatula on the other end, underside. They're terrible, but they're only, and they're really only good for like, meat that's going to fall apart. I've got that, and I feel like I'm going to need to use that to get the pot roast out of the pan, but I've got, you know, I don't waste anything. Like I'm going to take all of the, you know, the pan juices out. I'm going to put them in a big container and I'm going to chill it overnight. And that's going to let the fat settle to the top. I'm going to skim the fat off that, you know, that beef tallow fat is going to be used to make the roux for the gravy. So it's all going to, you know, all the flavor is going to come right back to it. It's like, you know, just adding layers to it. You know, it's going to be awesome.
Sounds like you're busy being a cook today.
Yeah, it's going to be, it's, yeah, this project is going to take most of the day. You know, most of it, thankfully, is just in the oven right now. So it's smelling real good in here. Those caramelized onions just push it over the top too. Oh, it was so good.
I do like good caramelized onions. I don't understand why people don't like onions, to be honest with you.
Well, you can get those caramelized, you know, do the caramelized onions. Some people just throw like raw onions in with the broth and just let it roast. I don't like doing that because you don't get the, you know, you don't get that caramelized onion flavor. There's just something about like pre-cooking those onions, put it in there as a seasoning instead of as a veggie. Because, I mean, nobody really wants to have like this, coarse chopped quarter of a fucking onion with their stew, you know?
No, but you want it with a taco.
I also prefer for my stews and stuff to use caramelized Vidalia onions.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. these are Vidalias that I just picked up. So
that is like the best flavor after caramelization that you get in like a stew or something.
Yep. That's what I've got going on right now.
Yeah. But I don't like eating raw onion. I'm kind of in the onion has a limited application camp.
Oh, it's gotta be cooked. Like the, onion itself. Great, great, great stuff. But I cannot just like eat an onion like an apple. That right there, just the thought of it gives me heartburn.
I don't know. I throw raw chopped onion in my salad.
Well, there's certain applications like salsa I can understand, but even with salsa, like you're looking for like that fresh flavor, in your salsa. I can understand, you know, raw onions in there. That's fine, but it's not like overpowering, right? You can't, right. I just can't do like the raw onion rings on burgers or anything like that, you know?
Yeah, or like raw chopped onion on a burger or raw onion in a salad. I'm not. That's not my bag.
Yeah. I don't know how this turned into the food cast, but I mean,
you said you were cooking.
Yeah, because that's just the way I go.
Because we're still four or three fairly fat dudes who love to eat food.
I mean, I count as two. yeah. Yeah, it's a good day. Like this, you know, any day that you wake up and you're like, yeah, I'm gonna clean a little bit and then I'm gonna like cook 12 pounds worth of meat. That's a good day. Like just the, you know, just getting into the kitchen and, you know, starting up a fire and like getting it going, you know? And then after that, of course, that all made me very hungry, right? Like, you know, I'm not, you know, chewing on this fucking like mostly raw fucking chuck, you know, but it smells really good. So like I put that shit in the oven and then I make myself what is becoming a weekend tradition for me, and that is chorizo and eggs. I don't know why, but I've gotten into making chorizo and eggs every weekend. And I gotta say, when I found that, you know, that chorizo, that place that sells the the fresh made chorizo, that makes all the difference, man. Makes all the difference. Some breakfast tacos and, you know, I'm off to the races. I am. I'm feeling real, real good right now.
I mean, I'm good. I don't even have to like throw it in a damn tortilla. Just give me some eggs, some chorizo.
Yeah.
Little bit of bell pepper and some, shredded cheddar and mozz or some queso and oh.
Yep.
Just give me that on a plate and I'm good.
Well, I mean, you can, if you're only making so much, you can always like, you know, you can stretch it a bit more by putting some tortillas on there if you want to. But I mean, if that's your thing.
Like there's a family owned Tex-Mex place here in Tulsa called Ricardo's.
That place is not good.
That place is what now?
I said that place is not good. I know Jason's okay. about to talk about the virtues of this. Jason, you're about as white as raisins and mayo. I'm sorry.
Okay. I don't like most of their food. I will say that. But there are two things that they do okay. Mm-hmm. One is their salsa's all right. Two,
I disagree.
They do a protein plate that is just eggs and one or two meats of your choices with the onions, the bell pepper, and queso. And that's what I get every time we go there.
Okay.
All right. Of what nationality is this food?
What's that?
Of what Nebraska nationality is this food?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. It's better than Los Cabos, dude.
Los Cabos sucks, too.
Most places you go to get, quote, Tex-Mex or Mexican food suck. The best shit comes from a truck.
I mostly agree with that. If you want good Tex-Mex in town, Katrina's is probably the best. They've got three locations in town, and it's fire. And then there's a place not that far from here called Real Tacos. That is literally just somebody took their truck and started a business. It's right next to Mazio's by my house. And
yeah,
they are also good.
And the truck over by Andy B's.
That truck by Andy B's is like one of the best in town. No joke. the salsa there, I can't replicate it. It's so good. They've got, that's some of the best salsa I've ever had. The green salsa is delicious. The red salsa is hot, but also delicious.
He's got some kind of magic going.
I was I've been sick all week, and I was trying to find spicy food to clear up my sinuses. So I went to, I'd been eating chicken noodle soup for 3 days. I was like, I need real food. And I went to Real Tacos on Thursday. And I had their burrito, which is like, I can't even talk today. Chipped cheek. What the fuck is that called? Anyways, so meat plus cilantro plus raw onion, plus a little bit of cheese and rice. And then they had this habanero salsa that I was like, give me a lot. And they're like, okay. And I was like, and give me some of your green salsa, because the green salsa was really good. And it was just, it was like pico, but it was habaneros. And
nice.
Holy fuck. It was fresh. It was, you know, like the difference between like a canned jalapeno and fresh jalapeno, right? Like, yeah. It was fresh, which realized why they gave it to me in three little, like, smaller than shot glass size containers. Holy fuck, that shit lit me on fire. But it did clear my sinuses. It was really tasty, and I couldn't stop eating it, and I had some spicy-ass poops afterwards. But, yeah, that shit was great.
And then there's one Tex-Mex restaurant that does some... not to besmirch anything, because I really think your granddad's tamales are probably the best tamales I've ever tasted.
Tamale Boys is really good.
Tamale Boys is really good, and there's another one over on right by 44. I think it's at Harvard, called Senor Tequila or something like that. Yeah. And they have pretty good pork tamales.
And in town right now, if you haven't had the Tamale Boys tamales, those are the best.
Yeah, and that's over near my house.
I know. So I've only been there twice.
We get that pretty frequently.
They that was a food truck that happened in the pandemic and then broke out of a food truck, and they decided to start making their food in a restaurant. But yeah, Tamale Boys is amazing.
And then there's one other Tex-Mex restaurant that I don't really get anything else. I literally go there for chorizo queso, and that's Trace.
There's another good Tex-Mex place called El Tequila here in town that's pretty decent off 81st and Memorial.
I can't go to Trace anymore.
I can't do Trace either. It was funny because I used to work close to there. And people would take people over there that were, like, from out of town at work. It's like, why are we giving them the worst version of Mexican food? But yeah, I was just a lowly employee, so I couldn't share my opinion and tell people why they suck so bad.
It's not really very good. The only thing they do well is they take queso and they put chorizo in it.
Okay. But you could do that at home.
I
highly suggest you do that.
They use like dollar store beef or something. Like, there's something wrong with their food.
I got food poisoning from them. Fuck the place.
Rusty and I both did on the same trip.
It was bad. It was very bad.
Yeah. But like, also had like a burrito that was as big as your freaking plate, bigger than your face.
We have a place up here. I mean, the place that we can go to up here is this is a place called Margaritas, and they have some really good Tex-Mex food, and they've got I'm gonna butcher this. It's Burrito Jalisco, I think is.
You can say it the white boy way. It's okay.
When you go in there, do you tell them I'm not a true northerner? You can make mine hot.
I mean, yes, when they bring the salsa out, they bring out the white boy salsa, and you just say, hey, I would like the real salsa. And they're like, you sure? And I'm like, yes. So they bring it out, and you know,
and then Rusty's the only one at the table that eats it.
We can have it. You know, otherwise we have to add hot sauce to the salsa, which kind of destroys it. But at least it puts some heat to it.
It's weird. The one thing I would miss, like moving anywhere further north than here, honestly, like if even Kansas, cause Kansas has shitty Mexican food too. And so does Colorado for the most part does too. Sorry, Colorado, is like good Mexican food. I was up in Minnesota a few months ago. And I was going to go out to eat with the bride and groom. They were like, oh, yeah, we're going to meet some people for some Mexican food. I was like, And they were like, do you want to go? And I was like, I don't want to be an asshole. I was like, I don't want to be an asshole. I was like, what are you guys doing afterwards? So I met them at the bar afterwards because I just did not want to waste money on bland bullshit that was in Minnesota. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure you were gonna get into.
Yeah, they're gonna be like some kind of sweet salsa with like corn and jelly in it or something. Like everybody likes like fucking sugar and everything in the up north. I don't understand it. That's why everybody up north is so fat. I'm sorry. You just eat syrup and jam and sugar in everything. I don't even have sugar in the house.
I don't look. A lot of that
stems from back in the day when for them to have, somewhat fresh food year round, they had to can a lot of shit.
Yeah, but you don't have to can things in sugar.
Sugar is grown in very warm climates. I don't understand why there's so much sugar up north. Sugar it's and cheese. Not, I get the cheese thing, but sugar. Okay,
well, cheese is a different thing. There's people up here that will fight you over cheese.
Fuck.
The sugar thing, I don't understand it either. Like, there isn't anything that's hot up here. It's all either sweet or savory. That's the two flavors you get. That's it.
I'd be willing. There is no hot. I'd willing to bet that like Green Bay is probably like the diabetes capital of the world.
I don't know. I don't think so. Not Green Bay. I don't think that Green Bay.
I wonder if this is actually a thing.
Yeah, I'm also looking it up.
They don't get outside that often because it's cold 9 months out of the year, and they eat shitloads of sugar and cheese.
India is referred to as the diabetes capital of the world.
It accounts for
17% of the total number of diabetes patients.
Diabetes, Wilfred Brumley over there.
Diabetes.
I'm feeling sassy today.
I mean, he is where I learned of diabetes.
Alabama is the diabetes. Capital of the United States.
Of the United States.
Yeah, my girlfriend lives so close to Alabama, I tease her about all the sweet tea there. She said it's a completely different version of sweet tea in Alabama. She said it's kind of like maple syrup.
It really is bad.
Everybody drinks it all the time.
They take a semi-thickened sugar water. And they brew tea bags for like 3 minutes in it.
They thicken the water with sugar.
They do. Like for every gallon of tea, there's like 4 cups of sugar.
It's nuts. Yeah. Now, the funny thing is that most people in the South, like the South, like the version of the South that you think of is like Georgia, Alabama, Louisiana, all of those places, right?
And don't forget Florida.
The deep South. Those are the diabetes, counties, like the highest percentage of diabetes.
Well, that's because you either have sugar in all your drinks, you fry everything.
That's so good.
And you have biscuits or cornbread with every freaking meal.
See, I don't think it's the frying, and I honestly really don't think it's the cornbread either. Biscuits, cornbread, I can understand.
Cornbread and biscuits are a lot of carbs, sir.
Yeah, but
they're pretty good too.
All right, I get it. I understand.
I can't live anywhere that doesn't have fried food, good Mexican food, or barbecue, and it's like I'm limited. I'm as far north as I can go.
Well, okay.
Can't get any further north than like North Carolina, honestly. Like after that, everything starts to get.
I was gonna say you can get good barbecue up here, but I was wrong. And I had to stop myself. because all of the good barbecue that comes from all the good barbecue places that are up here are run by former Texans.
Right. You're not gonna get a Luke's or a Leon's up there.
Well, right.
And that's the other thing too, is you can't really go any further west than here and get all those things either, Justin.
That's true.
You're making a trade off somewhere.
I know. It's honestly, the best Mexican food I ever had in my entire life has been in El Paso, Texas, like better than anything I can make.
Oh, well, yeah.
El Paso is like, for Mexican food in the U.S., like nobody.
El Paso is like a Mecca.
Nobody beats the Mexican food in El Paso. It's so good.
But that's because of a lot of the things that.
Even I've talked about it on here before.
That can be grown natively right there and they don't have to be shipped in.
They even have like Mexican versions of like Southern food. Like I had mashed potatoes and chicken fried steak. The mashed potatoes had chopped jalapenos in them, and the breading in the chicken fried steak was seasoned with serrano peppers. So it had like this kick to it, but it wasn't overwhelming. Oh my God. Like it was next level good. Like that. Except for the fact that there's like goat heads all over the ground in El Paso, like
I love
El Paso.
I knew an El Paso native who would take the white gravy and put serrano pepper and chili powder in the gravy instead of like salt and pepper.
When I was growing up, my mom used to make a gravy mixed with red chili. I know that sounds weird. But we put red chili sauce on freaking everything when I was a kid. So it was like a thickened red chili base. Wasn't something you put on like mashed potatoes, but you put on like pork chops and stuff like that. And it was her learning how to make Southern food because my dad's lived here his whole life. And it was pretty good. But yeah, growing up, all I ate was Mexican food. And then my mom learning to make, I guess, traditional American cuisine all throughout my childhood. So I have a first love for Mexican food and then a love of barbecue from dad because he always did home barbecue. But anyways, man, we got distracted on food. I've been sick and listening to records and playing video games. Jason, what have you been up to?
I was working my ass off all week.
No.
Boring as hell.
We had our game night the other night, and I was sick, and I told you guys, I was like, I could be contagious. Do you still want to come over? And you're like, yeah. And I was like, why don't I just order some, like, Savastanos? And your guys were all like, I want to eat some fucking pizza. And everybody came over anyway. But the for anybody who doesn't know, I know it's not going to be as good as, like, Chicago style.
Mm-mm.
But Savastanos is...
It's the closest damn thing you can get, man.
And it's Chicago pizza here in town. And I know some people could
get to. It is close as you get to Giordano's Pizza without going to Chicago.
And it's deep dish. I know some people say that's a casserole. I'm sorry, it's really fucking good.
It is a casserole, but it's the best kind of casserole.
It's so thick. There's so many toppings on it. Like I don't understand the hate for casserole style pizza because like. Their bread is basically just like crusty garlic bread. Like the crust is really good. Yes. And everything about the toppings are really good. Like everything tastes so homemade. The sauce tastes so good. And I know the sauce is on top, but like there's like four people ate like 8 pounds of cheese.
Yes.
It's so good. You're still pooping Justin this, Jason.
Justin and I had like four slices apiece. But I had him order the Italian sausage and add pepperoni to it, right? Like the Jason's Rusty special.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It's
and so even many Justin pepperonis. Commented that it's not just they added pepperoni in. He's like, there is a stack of pepperoni right here. I was like, yeah.
It's like a yes. whole layer that's triple stacked in the middle of the pie of pepperoni. I was like, oh my God, there's like a yes. whole half inch layer of pepperoni in the middle of this.
Yes. You're turning me on. Stop.
It's so good.
The only fail, Justin, was you didn't get the garlic house sauce. You got the standard ranch.
It's okay. It's all right. Yeah,
it's all right. They still make their own ranch. It's still good.
Every time I go to Tulsa,
they have this garlic house sauce that's a ranch base, but they add garlic and a bunch of other stuff to it that is really good on a salad.
We didn't have salad.
Yeah, I know. That's why I didn't eat any. Ranch on pizza is a travesty.
Yeah, I wasn't going to add anything to that. I don't know why we got the ranch, to be honest with you.
Because John asked for it.
That he didn't use.
No, he used it.
Oh, okay.
He had a big old pull of it on his plate.
I was laughing because we always give some Yuzum, who's part of Picking Up the Pixels, informally of the carousel that we started a million years ago, really likes pineapple in his pizza, and we give him no end of shit.
Stand that shit. What the fuck?
And I kept saying, like, I kept thinking to myself, like, this place is owned by Italians. They don't own any, like, any pineapple, right? I was thinking about getting a can of, like, pineapple and just, like, sitting it on the counter and asking if he wanted to put that on his pie.
Why would you do that? I don't get it. It makes no sense. Ugh. Yeah. Pineapple on pizza is terrible.
And it's not just the trope. Like, I think it legitimately makes it taste awful. Like, I understand that it's like a meme at this point, but
it is. It's very much a meme. But I am.
I don't understand. I don't understand. Again, going back to sugar, I don't understand putting sweet bits of fruit on a savory pie.
Yeah.
Pineapple by itself is not disgusting,
either.
But I don't understand adding sweet bits of fruit to the top of your pie. I can just give you some, like, a pack of M&Ms, throw that on your pizza.
Ugh.
But, Justin, I will point out that those Italians still do cave to pressure. It's just, you're not going to find pineapple in a deep dish. It's only on their thin crust.
You're not going to even find it on any of, like, the traditional pie places, either. The New York City place that I used to go to that finally closed didn't do it either.
No, the whole Canadian bacon with pineapple is a whole West Coast thing that
they ruin everything. With. They ruin all food. I'm sorry, California shit fish tacos suck ass.
Nah, I can't do. I mean, Jason knows for sure, but I have a violent reaction whenever I detect pineapple in anything.
Pineapple and watermelon.
Oh.
You want to see Rusty run. Pineapple and watermelon. And then if you throw a spider in there with it, you might not have a house left.
Nope. Nope, you probably won't.
He will run through every single wall getting away.
I might burn it down just to be sure. That stuff is nasty. Like, I don't know. I can't describe it, but okay, I can. Pineapple tastes like bile. To me, that's what it tastes like. It tastes like the sour taste that you get in your mouth immediately after throwing up. It's that. That is what a pineapple does to me. It does not matter if it's cooked or juiced or not, it is the nasty. It is the nasty. I cannot do it. And then and watermelon, I've actually gotten a little bit better about watermelon, but it's, I have to be like, It's right. not. It's got to be fresh, fucking fresh watermelon, and only in limited quantities. Because back in my early days, I was trying to lose weight, and I credit the U.S. Army for this. They put me on a watermelon diet where I ate nothing but watermelon and supplements and water for a period of time to flash lose a bunch of weight so that I could, you know, join up. And yeah, at that point, I could not. My everything tasted like watermelon afterwards for the longest fucking time. I could not do watermelon. It was, my body would physically reject it. So, yeah, needless to say, I didn't go to the army because, yeah, fuck that, fuck that diet. But yeah, that lasted for a long ass time for me. I could not do it. And of course, I've already done the whole spider thing on the show many times before. I was cleaning up my room here to do some things in the studio, and I found that one of them eight-legged freaks had actually touched my computer. And I swear to God, there was I almost pulled a fucking flamethrower out. Like, I'm gonna have to sacrifice this computer now. Fucking freaks touched it. So yeah, I'm gonna poison the fucking I will poison the land around this house this spring.
I'm happy spiders. To hear you're coming back to the watermelon though.
Well, I mean, it's a thing that I can do once or twice a year. It's got to be like I have to like open up the watermelon to be able to do it myself. So yeah, and last year it was just a hot ass day in the summertime, and it was a cool watermelon, and I was like, it's either this or beer. So I had my had both. And yeah, that was it's a thing. I don't know. Watermelon was never really as bad for me as pineapple. I don't think I'll ever do pineapple. Ever. I even tried one of those flavor changing tablets that you used to be able to find on ThinkGeek. To see if it was just like if I could trick my brain into actually allowing me to have pineapple. No. Apparently it does not change the flavor of bile. So
damn, I've never thought of it as that flavor, and now I can't untaste it in my face.
Don't let him fucking ruin you.
I'm sorry. I don't think it's
pineapple is a wonderful fruit as long as it's been refrigerated and it is ice cold.
I don't think so. I think that it's the bane of my existence. It does not belong on anything, and it should. I don't want it extinct. I just want it to live in the wild and not be consumed around me. I can't stand it. I mean, it's so bad. Like, I could go to a bar, and if they do like the whole like and a splash of pineapple juice, I can detect the splash of pineapple juice ruins the whole fucking drink for me.
Yeah,
I can't. Oh. Yeah.
So that, speaking of bile.
Okay.
I did pick up a game on Green Man for $15. The sale ended a couple days ago. But $15 was within my current budget. So, and I wanted to try the game. I've just loaded it earlier today. RoboCop Rogue City.
Let me know if it works past the intro for you. I can't get it past the intro. So really? I can do the first level, and then when it transitions, it just wouldn't work. So I refunded it. I was having fun with it, but try to get past it. That's my challenge.
I'll let you know what happens. I mean,
at this point, like, I'm just going to get it on a super deep discount because I'd love to play it. I liked what I was doing, but fucking wouldn't work.
I gotta say, the opening cinematic that I watched right before I stopped to eat lunch, that definitely captured the spirit of the first movie, that's for sure. Like, if the writing's as good as that opening cinematic all the way through, I think it's going to be fine.
It's a pure love letter to RoboCop. Like, all the details are there. But I didn't ever get very far. So let me know if you can get through it. If you get past the first mission and then it gets past the cinematic, because that's where it crashed every time for me.
I will. The recommended settings has me maxed out without DLSS, so we'll see how it runs.
I would. Maybe it was. Who knows what it was?
It was a broadcast game. That's what it was.
Well, they. I'm guessing maybe it did that because I know they specifically worked with Intel graphics during development. So I don't know if maybe that was just like a driver issue from the get-go or what. But we'll find out. So I got it. I've not played a whole lot of it yet, so I'm not going to really speak to it. That I had planned on playing some of it before we recorded today and just never got around to it. It ended up being a super busy week for me.
Yeah. I've only really played a couple games this week. I mean,
what'd you play?
The biggins that I played. I mean, the big one that I played this week is the same big one that I played last week. Fucking Helldivers 2 has been a blast and a half. They fixed a lot of the fucking, the login and, you can log into the game finally and not have issues. There's a couple, minor issues every once in a while trying to get into groups, but outside of that, game's largely playable. And we're progressing up the difficulty ranks now to get to the point where we can handle bigger and crazier shit. And I get that game gets better as it gets more difficult, I think. It gets crazier and crazier as things go on. And just because it gets, it's not like an artificial hard, right? There's just more shit being thrown at you and, situations where you just have to, like, figure out the best way to handle it. And I think Justin and I were working on not Suicide Mission, but the one right before it, Impossible Extreme or something like that. And I think we were up to the point where we're like, okay, if it's just the two of us, we can put the... basically the stealth suits on and Metal Gear Solid our way through these things as an extra challenge. Like, we could fight, but we know that if we stand our ground, we'll survive it, but it's gonna take a lot of our fucking ammo and a lot of time to deal with, and it's based mainly the time that we have, that we don't have a whole lot of. You think a 40-minute match is is a long time. Not when you're spending 10 minutes fighting off a fucking horde that does not stop, so there's a lot of movement, a lot of you got to get from point A to point B, and trigger is the least amount of fights as possible as you go. And that was a lot of fun. Like, we put our fucking stealth suits on, crouch walk through, you know, there was some places where there was we'd have a patrol coming towards us, and I said Justin, lay down, and we go prone, and this fucking this patrol walks right by us, and you know, because of the armor that we're on and the fact that we're prone and we're not moving, we don't trigger their aggro, and they walk on by. And I'm like, this is cool. This right here makes it feel like Metal Gear Solid. This right here makes it feel different, you know? That was a really cool moment for us. And then we get up and slowly make our way towards another objective. We're up to the point where we don't fear Bile Titans. We respect the fact that they exist, and we try to make them unexist as fast as possible. we've got chargers basically on farm. We know exactly what we need to do to take care of those. As long as we've got real guns on us.
Yeah, we tried out the spear too, which did mm-hmm. take down a Bile Titan in one shot if you can line it up with its face.
Right. You've got to hit it right in its chin to be able to take it down with the spear. It's just like there's guns that you want to be able to play with, but they feel underpowered. I believe I heard that there's a balance pass coming for weapons coming soon. I don't know when soon is, but it needs to get here quick, because everybody is basically running the same loadout. Once you unlock the breaker shotgun, the rail gun, you basically are down to two or one, two different options, I would say, for carrying around in the upper level, upper difficulty levels, as far as like, weapons and armor, so you're kind of locked in. You don't have a whole lot of, differentiation in the gameplay. Which, I mean, for now, it's okay because the fights themselves are engaging. Eventually, that's gonna wear down, and I have no illusions that if something doesn't change about this game relatively soon, there's gonna be a drop off, because people are gonna be like, it's the same damn thing every time. There's not a whole lot of change in moment to moment. So they've got some things that they need to do, but once they, once they get that, that hammered out, I think that, it's got enough going for it that they could definitely make this into a much, much bigger experience, provided that they go in the right direction. There's leaks online about vehicles and like, the mech suit and, a different faction and a bunch of other shit, people data mining the fuck out of the game. I've never really been super big fans of data mining, but when it comes down to it, I want to see what the game can produce. And I think vehicles could do it. I mean, vehicles could be an interesting way of traversing long distances in that game very quickly. But somebody's going to have to take that stratagem, right? So there's going to be one dude that's going to be like, I've got the vehicle stratagem. I can only use it once every mission,
Yeah.
It's going to be, that person's going to be hogtied. It's not super great for randoms. It's good for a 4-man group, like a group of, 4 friends, but, for randoms, I don't know how that's going to work out, but I have played a few games with randoms, and they were, you know, largely pleasant experiences. Most of the time, if I got like team killed, the dude would say sorry, call me in, and then like point towards my my gun, like the support weapon that I dropped. You know, they might pick up my samples just to, you know, make sure that the samples got picked up, but they will always tag where my gun is so that they would, you know, so I would be able to pick up my rail gun and continue on. You know, so it's been really respectful. I haven't had anybody that's been like super elitist or anything like that with the, you know, with that. And the community has been pretty, you know, pretty awesome so far. You know, there's always bad eggs and that will happen. But, you know, if I'm not online, Justin, and you want to play games, I suggest trying it with randoms. It's actually not that bad. You don't use, you know, your normal audio call outs. So it adds an extra level of tactical awareness, because they're using the ping system to ping things out for us. And you have to use your like affirmative or no or something like that. Your quick chats, you know, to be able to communicate with your team quickly if they're not on voice, you know?
Right.
You know, it adds an extra layer of fun for me. Just playing around with that. You know, I don't know. What has been your thoughts of, over the last week for Helldivers 2?
Yeah. Just needed to stretch my legs a bit before trying the harder difficulties. I think it's a higher octane version of what we've been doing, and it's kind of stretched me to rethink quick decision making with that. And yeah, the railgun is definitely the meta right now, as well as the breaker. I don't know. I mean, we played like 9 matches last night. Like, we had some fun. I had a couple of bold friends jump in that were lower level than us that we kind of dragged through some extreme and some hards, which was kind of funny because they were just like fighting waves. It's like, no, guys, you got to go. Yeah. You gotta keep coming. You're going to run out of ammo. But we leveled them up a few times and sure got them enough bucks to buy some higher end stratagems.
Definitely.
And then we dragged Matt through some stuff earlier this week, which was fun. Yep. His level 3, and I think we were playing like a challenging or something.
Yeah. Well, he dropped in as we were fighting a Bile Titan, and he's like, what the hell is that? You know,
we're in the space now where we're getting like 3 plus spawns of Bile Titans and then like 6 chargers in a row, which is ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there's got to be a different meta. I know the devs are saying like there's hidden buffs to a lot of these other weapons. I just haven't found it yet. I haven't found a gun that's as good for blind fire as a shotgun. I think the shotgun's just too good for blind fire, because you don't even, like, when you're like trying to maneuver around a bunch of stuff, like, you don't even really have to aim. You just have to have the center screen on something and just know where the center screen is in your view and then pull the trigger. And usually that's enough to stagger or give you a second to aim. Yeah, like, we've just gotten playing it a lot different. Playing it very sneaky the last few matches have been pretty fun. I don't know. I'm looking forward to more Helldivers, honestly. Like, it's such a good game.
Yeah, it's the dumb fun kind of, you know, game where the developers understand it doesn't necessarily need to be super deep. It just needs to have good gameplay.
Well, the gameplay is deep. The rest of it is an inch deep. But yeah, it is the perfect jump in and play game that I could play a lot of.
That's the thing. That's the thing, though, right? Is that's all it really has to be. Is it has to present you exactly what you think it is on the surface, and then just make the gameplay deep, because the entire objective of the game, and that's why it's kind of like the perfect analog for a Starship Troopers game is you're just going down to a planet to squash bugs or robots. That's it on surface. And then just make it deeper with the gameplay, you know, give you with your objectives or the touches like launching the nuke or, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, launching the nuke. It's just me, you know, basking in the cetera, in the sun. It is a straight ripoff of Starship Troopers, honestly.
Yeah, it's really good though. I have played some other things though this week. I've been working my way through. There was a bug with Infinite Wealth Yakuza that caused my save progress to roll back like 2 hours. So I caught back up with where I was at and then started one of the long dungeons. Been having fun with that.
That sucks.
I think I've got like 4 chapters left of that game. So I want to make a dent in it so I can uninstall it. Like, I really want to play a Souls game right now, but I'm told myself I'm not going to until I'm done with one of my bigger games. And then I've been playing Balatro, which is something nobody here has heard about. So mm-hmm. I found it on sale. It's literally a card game based on poker. And I know this sounds like really dumb, but so you have a poker hand, right? And then I don't understand a lot about poker, so I'm just going to explain this from somebody who doesn't understand a lot about poker, but I'm getting better at it. You have your poker hands and, you know, it plays, the base game is poker, but they add modifiers. So your first run is 3 blinds. And then there's the first 2 don't have modifiers. And the last one, it's called a boss blind and it has a modifier. And you get modifiers every time you play. So it'll say get to 300 chips. And so you'll have a full house, which will be like a base payout of, let's say, 60 chips times 2. And then you'll have a joker, and you buy different cards to help enhance your modifiers. So this joker will say times 4 multiplier on any aces played, right? And so you'll have an ace, which is 11 chips on its own. So let's say it's 60 times 2 for your full house, right? And it's 3 aces and 2 kings, right? So that's 3 aces at 33 with a 4 times multiplier and then 2 kings at 10. And so that'll add up. I'm not going to do all that math right now, but that'll add up and that'll be more than the base value of that. And then in between each match, you'll earn money based on how well you did. And you use that to buy different modifier cards that are done at random. And then you'll have these things called Celestial Packs, which you'll do to enhance the modifiers of each of the different combos that you do, right? Like whatever that's called in poker, like a 4 of a kind or a 3 of a kind or 2 pair or a pair or whatever. And you'll buy those packs to enhance those. And then you'll buy card packs, which add additional modifiers to individual cards. Or you can add cards to your deck. So like at the end of one run, I had nothing but face cards. So all of my stuff was counting for a whole lot more because it was all face cards. That might be that one of the boss rounds is like every 7th card is played face down, so you can't see what it is. So you're either forced to discard it, which happens in most cases, or I had a joker that modified and gave me points for every card played. So I play like a pair and then play all my face down cards, and that would add to my total chip score, regardless of the fact that they're face down, so I didn't have to use my discards. It's strangely addicting. It's super cheap right now. I think like full price is $14.99, and then I got it on sale for $9.99. I just needed something random that was run based. That was, I like card games. I like stuff with modifiers, right? And so I just gave it a try, and then I've been strangely addicted. I was literally playing it right before we jumped into this. It's I kind of wish, like, instead of Solitaire on that came with the computer, like, it should just come with Balatro because it's way better. And it's really weird, too. Like, it's got this weird music and kind of a weird art style to the cards and this whole, like,
You can buy a tarot card that enhances certain cards or deletes cards from your deck. Like, there's all sorts of weird modifiers. So it's like poker on acid. And it's actually really good. Like, if any of that sounds like, watch a Twitch streamer or something. I don't know. The trailer doesn't do it justice. I bought it kind of on a whim because I was looking for something to just kind of like, I think I was waiting on you to be ready for something, Rusty, to play Helldivers. And I was like, I'm just going to play this a little bit. And I was like, I'm going to play this a lot. But, yeah, I put a decent amount of time into that stupid game and I've gotten way better at poker than I ever thought I would be. Been playing a Deep Rock Survivor Early Access. That game gets pretty crazy on the higher difficulties where you've got hundreds of bugs like swarming you and you've got to have like really good combinations to all of your weapons. Like the way that it plays out is it's Deep Rock Galactic, right? So you're one of the four dwarf classes. And as you level up the dwarf, which you do just by playing the game, you unlock different weapons. And there'll be, for every dive, there'll be certain objectives like collect 100 red sugar or upgrade a certain weapon to level 12 or whatever. And each one of those gets you like a core point. And when you unlock enough core points, you unlock the next difficulty. So one of the objectives is always complete the run. And then the other two are always different things that you have to do while you're on a run. But it, I don't know, like you unlock overclocks for all your weapons and you basically just move with one button, like just like Vampire Survivors, right? It plays out a lot like that, but not really. And then you move next to a rock, you start mining that rock and you use the Nitra to buy your upgrades to your weapons in between each level, as well as your gold. And some weapon upgrades are unlocked behind Nitra, some are behind gold. There are modifiers you can get that, like, for every two Nitra on you, you get 1% crit. So then you're incentivized to go through and mine a bunch of Nitra. And then the meta game is that you mine minerals like like the pearls and all that other stuff that you get in regular Deep Rock Galactic. You could go mine that stuff, and you need so many to unlock different core upgrades to your characters.
Like copper and stuff like that.
Right. And so it might be like mining speed or run speed or pickup range or critical chance. Stuff like that is all unlocked behind those minerals. So you're incentivized to do that. And then throughout the level, it'll be like, go pick up so many, mine 20 more kite or pick up like six, whatever they're called, blooms, or pick up like 12 bulu caps or whatever. And that'll give you a whole bunch of gold to help you with the run. But that other stuff is behind the meta progression, so that stuff's also important, but you get a lot more unlocks if you can beat the level. So, like, it does five dives that get progressively harder, and I don't know, it's pretty addictive. I've sat there and played it for, like, 2 and 3 hours at a time. It's what I've been doing when we weren't playing Helldivers, and it's a really easy game to just pick up and put down. So, yeah, I haven't really put any more time into Nightingale this week, so I'm not really going to talk about it. I might later today. But, yeah, it's been a week of pretty chill gaming. I know Helldivers isn't chill, but to me it's pretty zen. Like we've had tense moments, but it's still pretty zen. It's a really good blow-off steam kind of game.
It is. Like, I just want to shoot shit. Yeah, any kind of game.
Railgun Orbital is clutch. Just gonna say that.
Railgun Orbital is pretty clutch. It's an easy fire and forget kind of thing. I have been playing whenever I'm not doing Helldivers 2, I've been playing the crap out of Last Epoch.
Oh yeah.
And yeah, that game is, well, I mean, full disclosure, I'm playing it right now while I'm talking to you. It is an easy way to just turn off your brain after work and just like randomly, you know, kill shit. As far as like ARPGs go. This is, in my mind, it's on par, if not a little bit. Yeah, it's I'm a little jaded on Diablo 4. But I actually like Last Epoch a little bit better than Diablo 4. Just because there's more options as far as builds are concerned for Last Epoch. When you play something in Diablo 4, it's really dependent on your character, is a character's gear.
Yeah.
As to what you can and cannot do. In Last Epoch, it has, gear dependencies, and you get better with gear, but there it's got, branching skill trees for your primary class and your chosen abilities. So with those extra trees, you can specialize in things that other people don't specialize in. And it may or may not be the meta, for instance, but it's still fun to, to play around with, like I'm playing a warlock right now, and the whole idea behind this warlock is, to create a fissure. And that fissure does fire damage along a line on the ground, but it also shoots out spirits that track your enemies and hit them, by themselves. And then I have, specialized in that skill. So now that not only do those spirits fire out faster, but when somebody dies to that spirit, the spirit will jump to another enemy. So now I've got this fissure that's shooting missiles out, that's hitting other things, and it's bouncing around and killing things all over the fucking screen. And that's the kind of, thing that is not based on an item, but it's based on, the build of that, of that skill. And then all of my passives are, meant to support that kind of damage. So I've got this fire and forget kind of ability, and it does a bunch of damage based off of the fact that I've specced into it. I don't have the greatest gear because I'm still leveling it, but it still does, a decent amount of damage. That's the kind of shit that I find fun, because that same class can be played like a necromancer. That same class can be played like a necromancer that only summons wraiths. There's a version of that, that primary class that turns itself into death itself and can walk around as the Grim Reaper. It's that kind of gameplay that drives me into, like, look, this is a different way to do this kind of thing. You only have 5 starting classes, but each one of those 5 starting classes has 3 masteries, and each one of those 3 masteries has like 4 or 5 different builds that you can do with it. And all of them are viable. That's the kind of stuff that I like. It's definitely going to hold me over until Path of Exile 2 comes out. And I have, I'm under no illusions. Like, Grinding Gear Games and, Path of Exile, they know their shit. Like, they know how to do a, ARPG. I just wish that the barrier entry into Path of Exile wasn't so friggin' high.
Yeah, it's a little bit ridiculous.
Yeah, it's something that I think they really, really need to work with on the sequel. Because it's just hard as fuck to get into that game. Like, even me, where I put in hundreds of hours into that game, coming back to it, it's like, I gotta remember all this shit again. Let me sit down for another 4 hours and watch some videos to remember how to, like, level a character. God damn. It's nuts. You don't have to do that with Last Epoch. You can just get in. You can play the game, fuck around. You know, and there really isn't a whole lot of like negatives to respecking. You know, so you can kind of play around with what you want to do as long as you want to respec within that same chosen mastery. So, for instance, with me choosing Warlock, I can choose the five different, you know, builds in Warlock. But if I wanted to try the Lich or try the Necromancer or something like that, I would have to, you know, roll a new character and get it to level 20, which doesn't take very long. So it's fun stuff. But yeah, that's basically like every waking moment has been killing bugs or killing basically whatever is in front of me in, you know, in last epoch. So I mean, I got my monitor. I guess I could talk about that.
Yeah, big upgrade.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sitting here staring at it. I'm like, oh, yeah, I should probably talk about that. I said last time that I was going to look into getting a monitor. I did a thing. I decided to, you know, that I wanted the same size monitor that I had before. So I didn't want to upgrade to a fucking television like Justin was trying to get me to do.
Well, you also don't have that much space either.
Well, like I say that, but I'm actually
in his living room most of the time.
Yeah, I say that, but I'm looking at two 34 inch ultra wide monitors in front of me, and that might as well be a television.
Right, but they're two separate monitors.
They are two separate monitors. You can have
different shit up.
I can have two different, different shit up. Yes, you're correct.
I can split the inputs on mine.
Huh?
I can split the inputs on mine.
Oh my God. Whatever. Anyway, 34 inch quantum dot OLED as my primary gaming monitor. It's a 1440p monitor because I don't need 4K. I've got glasses. I don't see the difference between, you know, 1440p and 4K. I just don't. Everything is just as sharp as I want it to be, and I get more frames on 1440p anyway. So, that said, I've got that 34-inch monitor. It is unfortunately the same price as the old monitor. So I spent $1,000 on this fucking monitor, but it is the Alienware with the G-Sync Ultimate, HDR, you know, all the bells and whistles.
Oh, yeah. You've never seen HDR.
I've never seen HDR. And I've also never seen 1,000,000:1 contrast ratios. So, yeah. It makes my old monitor look like everything is gray. Everything is blacks or gray. Not black, but gray. They're different grayscale colors. And the colors don't pop on the old monitor, whereas they definitely pop on the new one. It was a night and day difference. Like when I watched the first nuke go off in Helldivers 2 in HDR with, you know, with the quantum dot OLED brightness and contrast, and just like seeing my character silhouetted against the mushroom cloud, I was in love. Like this is what I've been missing. I love it. It was probably one of the best upgrades that I could have gotten for my panel ever. I love this thing. And I recently did what I said that I was going to do fucking a year ago, and I mounted them to the wall. So now they're set up in an array, not on my desk. I've got two, the old one stacked on top of the new one. And yeah, I have to kind of look up to see all the stuff on the top monitor. Yeah, it's a little high. would if I had the space, I probably would have put it off to the side, but I don't have the space, so eh. I can't do without it now.
Getting a new display, I think, is the biggest upgrade you can get aside from a graphics card, honestly.
You know, I didn't know that I was missing this much detail, like this much, like the, you know, when the colors pop out and the contrast is, you know, is like, I don't understand how I missed this. Like there's something different about it. So yeah, I definitely, I highly recommend getting yourself a good OLED one. The, you know, other reason why I picked up the Alienware is it has a 3-year cross-ship parts and labor and burn-in warranty. Which,
and burn-in is not the thing it used to be on older OLED displays. Like, there's a lot of burn-in protection, and it just doesn't happen the way. Unless you're a boring person and you watch news all the time with a banner on the bottom that's static, or you play MMOs 24 hours a day for months straight, like, you're fine.
Well, and the newer Samsung panels that are QD OLED or Quantum Dot, they have a lot of, which Alienware is.
Yeah.
They have a lot of IMF features, like it does a pixel refresh every time you power it off and power it on.
After 4 hours.
It does one automatically every 4 hours if you have it continuously on. So, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. And LG started adding a lot of those features in with their C2 and C3 when they saw Samsung was coming right out the gate with it on their QD OLEDs. So, you know, it's not burn-in isn't what was with like the C1 and the first generation C2. Where, you know, you could have a static icon burn into your TV, you know, in like 10 hours or something. I mean, that's a good part. It's also just so much deeper. And to be honest, a lot of the mini LED monitors are getting that deep contrast too.
Yeah, it's not nearly as good, though.
It's not as good, but it's better than regular LED or LCD.
Yeah, well, both
are better options.
There's something different about each individual pixel having its own luminance versus it being backlit. Doesn't matter how small your zones are, you're still going to see like a halo effect around your zone. That's what makes, you know, the LCD monitors or LED monitors actually like have that grayish blacks. It's because it's got to block out the backlighting, and it's not going to block everything out. OLED being its own luminance, you can get that, you know, that stupid high contrast ratio because not all the pixels are actually, you know, each pixel is producing its own light.
It won't be long before every modern TV is OLED and micro LED, because micro LED has a similar effect because the pixels are so small that basically put a self-illuminating substrate behind the micro LED.
Yeah, they're getting pretty crazy. Like, I watch a lot of science videos. And
there was all the techs.
Well, there's a documentary about, you know, about the it was just a random documentary that I ended up watching, got really really like interested in it. It was behind the science of blue LEDs. And if you think back, like in the 80s, you didn't really see blue LEDs. You saw green, you saw red, but you never really saw blue. It was when they got, you know, when somebody cracked the code to be able to actually get a luminescent blue LED that we started seeing displays actually like take off, you know? So it's a really interesting watch because it goes into the science behind how blue LEDs are created and how LEDs in general are created. And then where they're going from, you know, from there. So, I mean, if you wanted to, you know, expand your brain, you know, look that up. It was a YouTube documentary I watched about the blue LED. I can look it up here after break, which means we should probably take a break.
We'll be back.
And we're back.
Woo! Woohoo!
Keto's great.
No, it's not. It's not. Okay, it is, but it isn't. Yeah.
It is until you eat something non-keto and then you go back into keto.
No, it's
when you go back on it, your body rejects all the other things that you've been putting in it for days, and then it just happens at once.
Has the opposite effect that Jason had.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
The keto flus.
I don't miss them. I don't miss them at all. Anyhoozle.
But rather than talk about what comes out of our butts.
I mean, to be direct with it, I suppose. We do not want to talk about that. Ass cheese. Let's.
There's a big push right now for Helldivers 2 merch, and there are some people that are risking copyright infringement to do so. And the leader of Arrowhead Games, I don't know if I'm pronouncing it right. It's like Palstat or whatever, or Palstet. I don't know. Caught somebody posting about it and said that they're going to create merch soon. So
yeah,
there is
I can see that.
I want a coffee cup.
I mean, I can understand where that comes from. I mean, not every developer necessarily looks at their game and goes, "Oh, people are going to want merch of this," you know.
Right, but you know, there's enough people out there that would.
when you surpass a couple million downloads, you should probably think about merch.
Maybe. At least a couple things. I mean,
just a little.
Even early access games have like fucking Satisfactory has the merch where you can buy the coffee cup.
And then some developers have done merch as a way of raising additional money to finish out their developments. Mm-hmm. I get it.
Yeah, that's a thing. Oh, what kind of merch would you like?
I just want like a coffee cup.
You want a coffee cup? Yeah. Why would you want a cup? Everybody's gonna get the coffee cup. What the fuck, man? What is with coffee cups and people that fucking collect coffee cups?
I got some great coffee cups.
Cup of a video game, dude.
I've got great video game coffee cups. No music coffee cups. Music's reserved for hats and t-shirts. Coffee cups is where all my game merch is.
I don't think so. I can't.
Justin doesn't do boxes and statues anymore. It's coffee cups.
We don't make boxes and statues anymore. Though, you give me... You give me a statue of four Helldivers sticking a flag in a fucking Tyranid, and it'd be like four Super Earth. I might think about it.
So something completely different. So the original Final Fantasy composer is no longer going to do full compositions for all the Final Fantasy games anymore.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
he is. His name is, I'm going to butcher the hell out of this, Nobuo Uematsu. Anyways, he's going to do segments, but he's no longer going to compose the whole soundtrack. He wants to focus on additional projects that he has. So he does have
Uematsu.
Yeah. He, I didn't know this, but he used to be the keyboardist in the Black Mages, which you may or may not have known about. But yeah, he's he looks like an older guy, so that doesn't surprise me. He looks like my dad's age.
The Black Mages is definitely Final Fantasy-esque.
Oh yeah,
It's
a rock band that does Final Fantasy music.
Yeah,
I think they've been at like a lot of like the different game conventions, but I think it's pretty interesting.
Yeah, he's
well. I mean, it doesn't. That doesn't surprise me. I mean, a lot of these, we're going to start seeing a lot of these, what we would say are, quote, revolutionaries in the gaming space retire just because they've been going at it for 35, 45 years at this point.
Yeah, like, of them. How many more years? Like, Kojima's not young. He's, like, in his mid-50s now.
I don't want to think about this. I don't want to think about this at all. I really don't, because here I am, like, I'm not getting any fucking younger right now, so I'm just gonna...
Kojima turned 61 this year.
Oh, yeah, he's older than I thought.
Turning to dust.
He's got, like, two good games in him left.
Don't tell me this. Oh, God, I haven't come to terms with this yet.
Well, think about how
old he's been helping develop games since 82.
My entire life.
He was 19 years old when he got in the business.
Okay, well, this is depressing.
Well, if you want to feel a little bit better, Hidetaka Miyazaki, the guy that has done Elden Ring and Souls, is only 49. So he's pretty close to our age, Rusty.
Oh, great. Oh, jeez.
He's 8 years older than me.
Oh, man.
Well, here's a news piece that'll make you hate and chuckle at the same time. The chuckle comes in that you know how your game is popular and worth almost its own weight in gold.
Okay.
When some random developers decide to relabel their games on Steam as your game.
Oh, yeah, I heard about this.
And rip your content.
This is messed up.
Yeah, so early Friday morning, the Helldivers 2 Discord sent out a warning saying that imposters were threatening the integrity of Super Earth. Developers of several different games on Steam had changed the name of their games to Helldivers 2 and completely altering their Steam pages, including the developer and publisher tags. This also occurred with Power World, Last Epoch, and Escape from Tarkov all in the last week.
I don't know how these people get away with this legally.
I don't know, but like one of the publishers or one of the developers behind the game specifically, Do Not Smile, which was briefly masquerading itself as Helldivers 2 last week, was published by a studio known as Whitehole Games until last November, when it changed its name to Glamourney. And then Fest Studios earlier this month. And that same developer also changed one of its games pages to Pow World.
Same. So basically, that's just just a scammer on the platform.
And then another studio, Soul on Board, which has also gone by Al Bob's and B-Side Studio, was responsible for all three, a Pow World, a Helldivers 2, and a Escape from Tarkov fake. Which I'm sure Catch probably caught more than a few gamers unawares. So you definitely have to be wary, even on Steam, as quickly as they found these and shut them down throughout the week. You know, there are certainly telltale signs of fake pages normally, like, well, one, you'll get multiple search results for the same game, right? But it's the
release date.
Yeah, the initial release date's a giveaway. Lack of reviews, etc. Because generally the developers and the games that are going to target this are ones that haven't sold a lot, right?
Right.
You know, and unfortunately part of this is partially Steam's own fault, you know, because they have in the past had initiatives that made their platform extremely open to independent developers, and that's just continued even since they put the axe to Greenlight. They're still very open to indie developers through early access. So, you know, it can be kind of the wild, wild west. So just a reminder that you got to be careful, even if you're on a store as good as Steam is. You know, Valve's not perfect. The platform's not perfect, and things can happen.
So, there needs to be a bit more vetting, and there needs to be a bit more, like, you shouldn't be able to change a, you know, developer name without it going, you know, going through somebody, you know?
Absolutely.
You know, you shouldn't be able to change the name of your game without it being approved at some point. Like, even if it's just something like something as simple as, okay, you know, developer A changed name here, from this to this, if it's like a typo correction, it's easily like determinable. But if it's like fucking, you know, do not smile to Pal World, that sets off some red flags, right? You really should be like, you know, stopping that shit before it even happens. So I'm not gonna give Steam any passes. I think this is a thing that Steam needs to actually, like, you know, buckle down and figure out, because these are, you know, yeah, the target games here, where these target games are not necessarily like AAA studio games, right? You know, it's Pal World, fucking Helldivers 2, you know, Escape from Tarkov. These are not games that are made by EA or fucking, you know, Ubisoft or, you know, any of those big fucking, you know, publisher names, right? So it's gotta be, you know, they've got to protect their storefront, because it looks bad for Steam. It's not necessarily bad for, you know, those developers. They're just doing their job. Like, they're killing it right now because they made some damn good games. It's just Steam as its marketplace is taking now egg in the face for allowing this shit to happen.
Right.
So you know, they need to protect their invest, you know, their assets. You know, Steam does. It doesn't come down to the individual, like the victims here, or I mean, really even the targets, the people who did the fake accounts. Yeah, they're taking advantage of something that's broken that needs to be fixed. And that's just it's a scammy thing, but scams happen all the time, right? You know, still take Jason's, you know, advice into account. You got to take a look at the page, make sure that it's legit, just like you would take a look at an email and see if it's legit before you click a link. You know, that's just the day and age we live in right now.
But, yeah, but you take that for granted with Steam because it's been a trusted platform for so long.
I mean, I remember the days before Steam Greenlight and the fact that everything was vetted. Everything that was on the platform was vetted. Like, you didn't see, you know, random shit fucking, like, RPG Maker games that, you know, that just, like, clog up the fucking, you know, platform with dumb shit. Like, yeah, you know, that's somebody's attempt at a game, and I'm being a little harsh on them right now, but honestly, there's a lot of trash, free-to-play, 99-cent fucking games that just clog up the shit in Steam.
Yeah, they could do with, like, 80% less games, honestly.
Yeah, it's good that indie developers have an outlet, but I think that, like, just like I feel about the Peggy thing, you have to have some kind of judgment before you put that shit out. Like, I guarantee you the people at Peggy didn't play that fucking card game.
Well, the bad part is that that was a reevaluation of the game. The developer had appealed their original 18+ rating.
Oh,
Peggy agreed to rate it at 3+. I read a little bit more on it.
Okay.
And then last week they decided that that those elements were actually in the game, even though the developer had showed Peggy that it wasn't in their prior appeal, and they changed the rating a third time back to 18+.
So basically they're dumb. Okay. it's just nuts. Like, I honestly, you know, kind of want, I don't know, it's a double-edged sword, because there's been some really good no-name indie fucking games that I probably would never have played if it hadn't shown up on Steam and blew up, right? And then, and there's, you know, there is a handful of these games that, you know, on paper probably would never really have gotten the light of day. Like, Among Us would never have gotten the light of day if it hadn't been on Steam, you know? But it blew up, you know, partially because of social media, partially because of the streamer culture, and then the fact that it was, like, readily available on Steam. So yeah, there is some truth to the fact that opening up to indie developers on Steam, you know, has been good, but there's also, like, I don't know, who's the judge between that? Like, I'm internally fighting myself right now. Like, I want so much to have a curated storefront that has good games in it, that doesn't have dog shit fucking games that just, like, are, you know, a half an, you know, an afternoon's worth of fucking effort thrown into, you know, into a maker, and then, you know, sold for 99 cents.
Yeah. I mean, I can get that, but then where would all these guys get all of their waifu games?
On a waifu store. There could be a separate storefront for this. I mean, that's where I would
the steam bargain bin.
Well, the steam bargain bin. I don't know. Like, I don't know. It would be like, you know, I don't know. Like a different level of the marketplace that they could go to, that people could go to for indie games. That would be perfectly fine with me. I guess then you could argue there's filters for that shit. I don't know. This is a thing that could, you know, I could go back and forth with myself because I'm good at that apparently. But I don't know. How do you feel about, you know, about this shit? It's just, you know, the fact that people are able to change their, you know, their game's name, their publisher name to match something, you know, match a successful game, and somehow that was allowed by Steam to happen.
I think there's a lot of automatic systems that they figured out how to get around. And well, that's the problem. I don't think that they don't submit this stuff to humans. I think there's a form.
And that's what Rusty's saying, is like changes like that should have to be submitted to humans.
It should be. It's not. Even if there was some form of like approval AI, it needs to be trained to not do that shit, you know? And I'm under, you know, like it's probably going to happen. It's probably going to end up, you know, being in the hands of humans for at least a little bit until they figure out what the, you know, what algorithm broke. Right. Because these are, you know, three big names, you know, three big games that are, you know, just they're shaking their fist and being super disappointed at, you know, at Steam as a marketplace. Steam has to be able to deal with that, you know, or they just wait another week and it gets, you know, brushed under the rug again. I am yeah.
Well, that aside, there's a couple of quick smaller stories. Apparently KOTAR remake is still in development somewhere, even though the Embracer Group is selling Saber Interactive for $500 million.
Okay.
Right. So, they've also cut...
I believe it when I see it.
...almost 1,400 jobs. So, I guess we'll see if that is a thing. I'm not holding my breath. Remedy has acquired full rights in the Control franchise from 505 Games, which is strange. So the crazy thing is Control is their best selling game, but also their Alan Wake 2 is their best selling game, but also their most expensive game. And I'm not pulling this from sources, pulling it from memory, but it took them $70 million to create that game. And they've sold like 1.4 million units and they've just broke even on that game. It came out in October. So 5 months ago, this game came out. And they just broke even on that game. And for context, like a lot of other games cost more to make, but it is like that weird space. Like, can they continue to make compelling stories at that kind of price point? It's a really high production value game. And still make a profit, right? When you can have people like a crew of five make a game like Pal World and sell like 20 times what Control did for a fraction of the budget. Like, what's a more profitable avenue? Like, I want that kind of stuff. Like, Baldur's Gate 3 that we've all loved, I think had a budget of $100 million and sold 10 million units, right? So, like, they've definitely, like, beyond broke even at this point. But that was also a huge critical success. Like, a lot of studios go under for not coming up with a great concept. I'm sure Helldivers at this point is more than broke even. It's right now sitting at over 700,000 concurrent users between PlayStation and PC.
Mm-hmm.
At all times. It just doesn't matter what time of day. It's always there. But,
yeah.
Yeah, so there's that for Remedy. Remedy's a good developer. Like, they actually haven't done anything bad. So I'm curious to see what they do now that they have full control and rights over their stuff.
And then just very randomly, and this might be more important to Jason than anybody else in the entire world, Dark Forces, the old Doom-style Star Wars game, has gotten a remaster, and it actually looks really good. It is still the exact same game. It's just they've taken a veneer of 4K, smoothed out pixels, and turned the cutscenes into, like, cartoon-style graphics, basically. But it plays exactly the same. The levels are laid out exactly the same. It just looks way cleaner. So if you're curious, I don't think that it's that expensive. I can't imagine this being like $50. But yeah. It is a very clean version of that game. If you're in the mood for playing a game that's exactly like Doom, but in a Star Wars skin. You know, complete with, you know, getting the key, right? Finding the random... If I remember, it was like a random officer you'd have to kill, and he'd have a key card. Then he'd have to remember where in that maze of a level the key card opened the door.
Oh, geez.
Hush, Lola. The dog who can't hear me. But other than that, I don't really have anything else.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Then with that, you can find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and Twitter.com/Tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/RealTiltcast, and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find friends of the show. You've got For the Love of Gaming. You've got BMFcast.com and TVGP.TV. They love RPGs as much as we do. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.